All right, guys. We are moving on to chapter 5, the lipids. Lipids. Like the carbohydrate chapter, lipids is going to get into chemical structure and chemical makeup of what a lipid is. Okay? With your clients, I never recommend getting into, what a C12H24O2 fatty acid molecule is. Okay. It's mainly going to be just for your understanding of how fats work, how fats might be used as fuel, and maybe the different types of fats that you need to understand the different chemical makeups. But is it really something that you're going to talk about often with your clients? Probably not. Probably just going to be like a basic, hey, here's what fats are, here's what they do, here's why they're important. Okay. So, what exactly are lipids? There's three categories of lipids that you need to know. Okay. The three fatty acids that you need to know are going to be on the left-hand side of page 182, which are the triglycerides, sterols, and phospholipids. A phospholipid is a compound that consists of a glycerol molecule bonded to two fatty acid molecules and to a phosphate group with a nitrogen-containing component. Phospholipids have both hydrophilic and hydrophobic regions that make them good emulsifiers. Phospholipids you can think of as all of your cell membranes in your body are made out of phospholipids. They're phospholipid cell membrane, which basically creates a barrier like your skin to not let anything that the cell does not want into the cell. Cell. Then you have sterols, okay, the bottom left, page 182. Sterols are a category of lipids that includes cholesterol. Sterols are hydrocarbons with several rings in their structure, so they're like a ring-shaped structure to a fat, meaning there's bends in the carbon bonds, making a, like a very similar to a glucose structure. But if they're made out of fatty acids. So a sterol is going to be like a hormone base in the body, or a transporter. Okay, cholesterol, we've heard of cholesterol. Sterol. Okay. Yeah, transporters, they're almost like the workers of the fats. Very little of your body, or your body has very little cholesterol, okay? In comparison to triglycerides, which is the third type of fat. Triglycerides are what we use for fuel as fat and what we store as fat. The chemical makeup of a triglyceride is going to be very important to understand. A triglyceride is made out of out of three fatty acids is in tri. Tri in triglyceride means three. Glyceride, refers to the glycerol backbone, or the glycerol side of the triglyceride. And then the uride refers to, I don't know what uride refers to. Triglyceride, okay. But we have to understand that a triglyceride is made out of three fatty acids and a glycerol backbone. When we digest triglycerides, we have to remove the glycerol from the three fatty acids before it can be absorbed through the intestinal lining. So we don't absorb full triglycerides. We actually get them on the other side of the intestinal barrier, and then once they get to the liver, we can form them as we want and store them. Glycerol goes to the liver as well, and yeah. Oh, glycerol is absorbed through the intestinal lining, yeah. Glycerol is very similar size to a glucose. So when we talk about what are lipids, we have a hydrophobic and hydrophilic sides. That's kind of cool for phospholipids because since they make up all the membranes. We have hydrophobic heads and hydrophilic tails that allow us to repel water so that our cells don't just burst and fill up with water or get saturated. We can repel the water if we want to. And also hydrophilic tails, which actually attract water and try to pull things through the cell lining, which is good for getting water-soluble vitamins through and things like that. Okay. That's at the bottom left, page 182. Now moving over to page 183. What is a fat made out of? Well, we have a carbon chain. See the top right of page 183. Fats are made out of, or fatty acids are made out of a carbon chain with a methyl group and a carboxyl group. Cool. but the length of the chain determines the different type of fats. So short chain fatty, if you look at the bottom of page 183, you have short chain fatty acids, you have medium chain fatty acids, and you have long chain fatty acids. Okay. Medium chain fatty acids are very efficient at being used as fuel or used as energy. Coconut oil is filled with a ton of medium chain fatty acids. Or medium chain triglycerides, they call them, can be used as fuel very easily. Long chain fatty acids aren't able to be used as fuel as easily, and might be broken down a little bit further to be cut in half or stored Okay, so
if medium is if coconut oil is an example of medium, what's an example of long?
Palmitic acid. Sorry, I honestly don't know too many examples, but at the bottom of page 183, there's butyric acid, caprylic acid, and palmitic acid. Those are just three examples of the different
chains. Doesn't have anything to do with how quickly it's absorbed?
No, but it does have to do with the fat's function in the body, which we'll get into. Where are we at? Yeah, okay, so chain length, foods that contain fatty acids with chain length of four, foods contain fatty acids with chain lengths of 4 to 24 carbons, and most have an even number of carbons. They are grouped as short chain, medium chain, and long chain. The shorter the carbon chain, the more liquid the fatty acid, the lower its melting point. Okay? The longer, so that means the longer the chain, the more solid at room temperature. The higher the melting point. Okay, so you can imagine coconut oil is solid at room temperature, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the melting point is pretty low still. I mean, it's 80 or 72 degrees. As soon as you get above regular room temperature, you see that coconut oil start to melt. As opposed to something like butter might have a little bit different type of fatty acids, in which butter doesn't melt until you get it up to above 80 to 90 degrees, right? Put it out in the sun or put it in a frying pan, and it melts when the heat gets a little higher. Butter can sit out in 70 degrees and still be solid. Okay, so there's some function stuff there. I guess they don't talk much more about that, but... okay, so fatty acid chains and liquidity. Yeah, obviously the longer the chain, so that's page 184, top left. The longer the chain, the more solid at room temperature it is. Yeah. So basically what it's saying is that the fats in milk are shorter chain compared to the fats in butter. Coconut oil might be more longer chain, medium to long chain.
Does that mean they're more saturated? Is that saturated fat?
No, it doesn't. Saturated fat is going to be a little bit different, but typically the longer the chain... we'll get into it, yes. Saturated fat just means that it's saturated with hydrogen ions, which we're going to get into actually right next. Okay, so we have different chain lengths of fatty acids, and a triglyceride can be made up of three fatty acids, and those three fatty acids could be of different chain lengths, just what attaches to that glycerol backbone. So that can make thousands of combinations of different triglyceride, like totals, we'll say. Next we're getting into the saturation of a fat, the bottom page 184. So if you look at the left side of page 184, it says, saturated fatty acid is a fatty acid completely filled by hydrogen with all carbons in the chain linked by single bonds. A saturated fat is a very stable fat, okay, meaning it's not very reactive to its environment, meaning the ability to break down and, we'll say, denature this fat, so it doesn't spoil. Like, butter and coconut oil can sit on the shelf for years upon years upon years and not spoil. Trans fat is the same way.
That's kind of scary.
Yes. But trans fat takes a polyunsaturated fat and artificially links together the bonds, creating a saturated fat, but it's now saturated, but it was chemically modified to be saturated, which doesn't happen in nature unless you burn animal fat to beyond its recognition sort of thing. You denature, yeah. Okay. An unsaturated fatty acid is just a fatty acid in which carbon chains contain one or more double bonds. The types of unsaturated fatty acid are monounsaturated, meaning one double bond, and polyunsaturated, which means more than one, more than two. Looking at the top right of page 185, what does that even mean? Oh yeah, and you might refer to monounsaturated fats as MUFAs, and polyunsaturated fat as PUFAs at the bottom of page 184. See that MUFA, PUFA? PUFA and MUFA. MUFASA. PUFASA. Bottom left, page 184. MUFAs and PUFAs.
I hope this new guy has a sense of humor like you. It's not like all dry.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, I would be so bored if I was trying to teach this right now without a sense of humor. looking at page 185, you have, saturated fats, monounsaturated fats, polyunsaturated fats. If you look at the carbon chains in the middle of these fatty acids, the top one, the saturated fat, as in stearic acid, they're named after their chain length, more or less, and their structure, but the saturated fat means there's 18 carbon bonds, and zero of them are double bonds. They're all saturated with hydrogen molecules, or hydrogen atoms. Party on. You can imagine that we have fats that could be monounsaturated. See on a monounsaturated in that middle there, the oleic acid, in figure 5.5 on page 185. We have one double bond. That means it is monounsaturated. Okay? This particular acid right here is known as oleic acid, and it is also considered an omega-9 fatty acid. Okay, have you heard of the omega fatty acids? Omega-3, omega-6, omega-9? The omega-9 has one double bond, and it's on the ninth carbon. Okay, so if you count those carbons, it's going to be carbon number 9 has the double bond. Okay? That's an omega-9 fatty acid. It is an essential fatty acid, right? We've heard of essential fatty acids. The three essential fatty acids are omega-3, omega-6, omega-9. They're essential for survival. If we don't have them, we die. Okay. Then we have a polyunsaturated fat. Next on page 185, it's 18 carbons with two double bonds, which is known as linoleic acid. Anybody ever heard of linoleic acid? Okay. Linoleic acid is known as an omega-6 fatty acid. And that's because it has, on the sixth carbon, it has a double bond. Also on the 9, though. So 6 and 9. So which one's going to be more stable of these two, the monounsaturated or the polyunsaturated? Mono, because it has less areas of attack for oxidation, if that makes sense. Okay, so we have an omega 6 and we have an omega 9. So if you were to continue with this, if the omega 9 has one double bond, the omega 6 has a double bond on two times on the carbon 9 and the carbon 6, the omega 3 fatty acid would have, where would the double bonds be?
3, 6, and 9,
making it very unstable. Meaning if you pour a cup of fish oil and leave it out overnight for 2 to 3 nights in a row and have oxidative air being able to touch it and address it, it will spoil after about a few days. Yeah, meaning this is why fish spoils typically pretty quickly, because cold water fish has a lot of omega-3. If it's open to air. But this is why they package, seal, and preserve fish by freezing it and putting it, yeah, in packages, sealing. Okay, so so here's a little bit of a difference furthermore on bottom right of page 185. Long-chain saturated fatty acids stack tightly and form solids at room temperature. So the way that the saturated fats kind of are organized, they like to stack on top of each other and create more of a solid form. As you get in the medium, medium or monounsaturated fats, they don't have a perfect linear structure, and they have a little kink in them. So when you get to that omega 9, it looks like it's straight right here, but it actually has a 1, 2, 3, 4 like this, and then it kinks and it breaks into like a L.
Right where the double bond is at?
Where the double bond is at, yeah. So you can kind of see that how they have the kink in there.
Yeah.
So those wouldn't lay perfectly on top of each other, so there isn't like a very set form, and they're typically in liquid form. Okay? And then you have the short-chain fatty acids, which are just literally, they take no form. They're very thin liquid-based, yeah. Okay. What else we got? Okay, so geometric and positional isomers, don't really need to know too much about that, but you can imagine that we have certain things like trans fats and hydrogenation. So you do need to know that a trans fat undergoes the process of hydrogenation. Trans fat, hydrogenation, you need to make sure you understand what those are. That's actually on the NASM CBT test and on the FNS test. Understanding that a trans fat goes through the process of hydrogenation. It is also called a hydrogenated fat. I think most of you guys have heard that before, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But just highlight that. Make sure you know that on page 186 under trans fatty acids and commercial process of hydrogenation, in which they add a hydrogen to the double bond. Yeah.
Which is what? By adding hydrogenation.
You create a more stable fat from an unstable fat. But it has to be done chemically. Yeah.
So
and it's chemically modified and not healthy. And the reason why, I don't know. But I'd love to know. Somebody Google that. See, I learned in here too, guys. My guess is that chemical structure has high reactivity in the body when tried to be broken down. I don't know. That'd be my guess. Maybe pro-inflammatory because of that. I don't know.
Because it's not natural.
Because it's not naturally occurring. That's my guess, yeah. Okay, so then you got some good terms here at the bottom of page 186. Omega 3, omega 6, omega 9. What are they? Why are they cool? And why should you know them? First off, let's go over conjugated linoleic acid in the middle of page 186. Also known as CLA. Anybody ever heard someone supplement with CLA?
Yep.
Okay. Well, linoleic acid is omega 6. So what does it mean to be conjugated? Well, let's see. It says conjugated linoleic acid is a collective term for a group of geometric and positional isomers of linoleic acid in which the double bonds are conjugated. That is, the double bonds occur without an intervening carbon atom that is not part of the double bond. Although present in only trace amounts in cow's milk, conjugated linoleic acid is being studied for potential health effects and is under study for potential anti-cancer benefits. Yeah, party on.
So how would that help in weight loss?
You know, I've heard of people taking CLA for weight loss. I thought it was going to explain a little more, but it doesn't.
It serves as a source of fuel for energy, but I don't see it.
Oh, it could help switch your body to more of a fat-burning fuel source sort of thing, like any fat would, but...
It helps metabolize fat, maybe?
Not that it helps metabolize fat, because it is a fat, but maybe likes to be used as fat, kind of like coconut oil, and, or likes to be used as fuel, and might stimulate more fat and fat in total use for energy. Okay, but I mean, I'm sure the supplement company comes up with something great to say about it to make may help you burn. Yes, David.
Quick question. The little numbers that come after some of these sentences, are they...
They're studies, referencing a study in the back of the book, yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, right there. It says, small amounts of trans fatty acids and conjugated linoleic acid are present in all diets. They can serve as a source of fuel... energy for the body. So my guess is that's probably all it does, is it helps to switch your body over a little bit more fat burning as opposed to carbohydrate burning, which you can do with a lower carb diet anyways, but yeah. Okay, so now omega-3, omega-6, omega-9. So we kind of talked about that on the other page, but let's look a little bit further into that. Let's define what omega-9 fatty acid is at the bottom of page 186 in this little brown box. Omega-9 is any polyunsaturated fatty acid in which the first double bond starts from the methyl end of the molecule that lies between the 9th and 10th carbon atoms. Okay, whatever. And the exact definitions are going to be for omega-6 and omega-3. Further talking about these, it should say actually the functions of omega-3. Okay, yeah, here we go. Okay, so do we understand the difference between the omega-3, omega-6, omega-9 as far as where the double bond is located? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let's talk about the functions of the fatty acids. Actually, first, we have to understand that the essential fatty acids are omega-3, omega-6, omega-9, which basically says our body, in the middle, bottom paragraph on page 187, it says our bodies cannot produce carbon-to-carbon double bonds before the 9th carbon from the methyl end. So we cannot manufacture certain fatty acids, such as omega-6 or omega-3. These come from food, and they are called essential fatty acids. So because we cannot manufacture a double bond when we build fats in our body before the ninth, then we have to get those from food, which are in the form of omega-6 and omega-3. Okay. What does it say? It says a deficiency of essential amino acids are rare, but if you can't absorb fat very well, it might happen. A lack of linoleic acid, which is omega-6, leads to scaly skin rash and dermatitis, poor growth in children, and lowered immune response. And in few human cases where alpha-linoleic acid was lacking, neuropathy, visual problems, and poor growth were the results. Alpha-linoleic acid is omega-3. Linoleic acid is omega-6. Alpha linoleic acid is omega-3.
Nine
is oleic acid.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
So three and
alpha. So yeah, it's oleic, linoleic, then alpha linoleic. Omega-9, 6, and 3.
Does that kind of correlate again back to the stunted growth? We were talking about some of the cultures not having a high fatty or protein rich
maybe
diet.
Well, fat. I would assume that the cultures ate enough meat to get enough omega-6, omega-3. And remember, from corn, the primary fat from vegetables is omega-6. So I assume they were fine in that sense. Stunted growth might have more to do with evolutionary needs or needs to their environment. If they weren't big, had to be big, strong hunters, they might not need to be that big. Also, potentially the quality of food they've been eating, which we'll talk about in a bit, or which we can actually refer to the grains being a less quality food, causing maybe a less robust immune system, causing issues in size, maybe. I don't know. A lot of things can go into that, but yeah, there you go. Damn Aztec Incan ancestors.
And the zone diet, tons of talk on icosanoids.
On what?
He talks a lot about icosanoids.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a huge bar. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
That word.
All right, so let's turn to page 188. Building eicanosoids, which are the omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. So really quick on the left-hand side of page 188, let's read about omega-3 according to the American Heart Association. The American Heart Association recommends eating fish at least 2 times a week. Fish is a good source of protein and doesn't have is not high in saturated fat that fatty meats do. Fatty fish like mackerel, lake trout, herring, sardines, albacore tuna, and salmon are high in 2 kinds of omega-3 fatty acids, which are eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, and docosahexaenoic acid. I haven't practiced those words too much. But EPA and DHA is the quality, is the active ingredient in the omega-3. It's 2 different types of omega-3 that are actually what you look for when you look at quality omega-3 concentration. For instance, if you take, 6 grams of omega-3 fish oil, and you have a very low amount of EPA and DHA, you're getting a crappier product.
I didn't know that. So, will that be labeled?
It will.
Yeah.
Every fish oil will label the total EPA and DHA per serving. You want to see, make sure those are in the highest concentration to recognize the best fish oil.
Which one should have a higher concentration?
I think EPA has a little higher than the DHA, but you just want both of them to be high.
And what's considered a high saturation?
How
do I know that I'm not buying Jib's stuff?
So it's
important to know,
It'll be how much EPA and DHA per serving. To give you an example, I think the one I take is going to be 600 EPA and 400 DHA in milligrams, I think.
Okay.
I'd have to show you a label of fish oil to show you what I'm talking about.
So there's no number like, okay, this is low, this is a good amount, you know?
If you do fish oil by the pills, the total number of servings. The total EPA and DHA per serving. If it's lower than others, buy the one that has higher EPA and DHA per serving. Remember, not not in total.
Just pick the one with the highest number.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Some people with high triglycerides and patients with cardiovascular disease may benefit from more omega-3, and these people should talk to their doctor about taking supplements to reduce risk, heart disease risk. So let's really quickly talk about the reason why omega-3 versus omega-6 might be better, or which one's good, which one's bad. Because when we think about fats and eating fat in general, the number one thing you need to be concerned with is the omega-3 to the omega-6 ratio when determining what fats are good and bad. Let me repeat myself. When we think about fats and eating fat, we want to optimize the ratio between omega-6 and omega-3, hopefully leaning more towards like a 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 ratio. Meaning we don't want 6 grams of omega-6 fatty acid compared to 1 gram of omega-3, and I'll explain why right now. Omega-6 fatty acid, linoleic acid, middle of page 188. 18-carbon essential fatty acid with 2 double bonds and is our main dietary omega-6 fatty acid. In a sequence of elongation and desaturation steps, our bodies convert linoleic acid into arachidonic acid, a 20-carbon fatty acid with 4 double bonds. To simplify a very complex picture, A series of echinosoids is then formed from arachidonic acid, and these echinosoids have an overall effect of constricting blood vessels, promoting blood clotting, and promoting inflammation. Eating omega-6s promote inflammation. Which is a good thing in some cases, because if you get a cut, do you want to be able to inflame that to get help and blood flow to that area? Yes. But if you eat foods with a ton of omega-6 in it on a chronic basis, is your body going to be more inflamed? Yeah. Remember, the root of a lot of modern disease is inflammation-based. Okay, guess what fat grains consist of primarily?
Six.
Omega-6. How much omega-3? Very little.
That's why the FDA says in moderation.
Exactly.
Problem solved.
Problem solved. Eat it in moderation. It's perfect.
Balance.
So not only does grain products have inflammatory agents from nature that are trying to protect it from being eaten, but also the omega-6 the omega-6 quantity in a grain is way higher than omega-3, which omega-3 is, if you look at this, anti-inflammatory. Okay. So yeah, when you're thinking about the fat ratio in your fats, you want to try to make sure that this omega-6 is very close to the omega-3. Most of the time, the omega-6 is going to be a little higher. That's okay. How do you determine this? It's very difficult. You just have to know what foods have the high omega-3s. Okay? This is why when we think of farmed meat versus free-range or grass-fed or organic meat, we run into an issue. Because if a chicken is corn-fed, guess what type of fat is going to be more stored in that chicken?
Omega-6.
If a chicken eats bugs and grass and little seeds that it finds on the ground, guess what fat is going to be in higher concentration? Omega-3, or at least the ratio is going to come a little bit closer. Okay, same thing with beef. What do they do to beef? They corn feed them, get them as fat as possible, kill them, and we eat them. Typically higher fat content, right? And that the higher fat content is higher fat in, since it's corn fed, which one?
Six.
Omega-6, okay? Free range grass-fed organic animals, like organic cows that are grass-fed, like New Zealand or from an organic farm. Is the ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 better?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, 2-to-1, 1-to-1 sort of thing. Which, if you have equal omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, you're going to be a lot more able to deal with the inflammatory omega-6 with the anti-inflammatory omega-3. That's a very good balance and healthy. So, really quickly now, omega-3 fatty acids. Alpha-linoleic acid is an 18-carbon essential fatty acid. This is at the top of page 189. It can ultimately be elongated to EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, damn it, and with 20 carbons and 5 double bonds, and DHA, docosahexaenoic, damn it, with 22 carbons and 6 double bonds. However, for these reactions to take place, it must compete with omega-6s for the same enzymes. Do we understand why the ratio is so important? If omega-6 is just totally swamping the whole scene,
they get
all the good enzymes, and the omega-3s don't get processed as much, leaving less omega-3s into the blood for digestion. So only a portion of alpha-linoleic acid is converted to EPA and DHA. Okay, the eicosanoids derived from EPA have the overall effect of dilating blood vessels, discouraging blood clotting, and reducing inflammation. Okay, if you eat a shitty diet and you want to reduce inflammation as fast as possible after you've made a dietary changes to be eat more whole foods and less inflammatory foods. Supplementing with omega-3 is very highly recommended. Fish oil of any sort, typically. Yes?
My brother-in-law told me that once, something about how if you have a really bad meal, if you were to eat a bunch of omega-3 afterward, it helps kind of carry some of the fat out. Is that true? Or is it
no, it wouldn't help carry the fat out, but it would potentially... I mean, here's the thing. You want the omega-3 and the omega-6 to be battling for these enzymes in an equal amount. You don't want the battle to be one-sided.
Yeah, yeah.
If you eat a shitty meal, the omega-6 is going to be really
it's
one-sided.
Shitty meal either way, right?
Yeah.
It's not like...
Yeah, but adding omega-3 to a shitty diet can help a little bit, and that's why they say, increases brain health, increases heart health, and all this stuff, because it can help a little bit, but why don't you just get rid of the shitty diet and not worry about taking an extra supplement to supplement for a shitty diet?
Yeah, just stacking it on.
Yeah, this is why people take omega-3, because it will help them very, 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 very little. It will help them very, very little, but, I mean, yeah, if you eat a shitty diet, you don't get enough omega-3, first off. You get a ton of omega-6. You get inflamed from fat and from the inflammatory agents of the carbs and the grains and crap. Then if you add the omega-3, it will help a little bit. Smidge. A little bit healthier. But, once again, take out the crap, take out the omega-3, eat from nature, you're going to get a perfect balance. Nature's not dumb. Nature's not going to be like, I just totally gave you a whole bunch of omega-6 and not enough omega-3. No, nature knows how we evolved, or we know how we evolved in nature, and nature provides us with the appropriate ratios for all foods. Okay. Where else? Let's finish that. Because these properties of omega-3 fatty acids have attracted interest in as a potential factor in reducing risk for cardiovascular disease... additional health benefits that have been associated with omega-3 acids include the secondary prevention of chronic diseases and an association with the following. Improving rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis, asthma, or skin conditions. Guess what? Those are all inflammatory conditions. What do you know? Omega-3 is anti-inflammatory. Guess what? A diet full of inflammation is going to lead to those diseases. Ulcerative colitis. What do you know? Another... inflammatory issue, reduces the severity of the symptoms to the inflammation of the colon and Crohn's disease affects the colon as well, or the digestive system. Cardiovascular disease lowers triglycerides, raises high-density lipoproteins and cholesterol levels, and improves blood circulation, reduces clotting, improves vascular function, lowers blood pressure. Why? Because all of this is anti-inflammatory. Type 2 diabetes, obviously, renal disease, mental function, Alzheimer's, depression, bipolar, Miguel, and joking. okay. Do we get it?
So 6 is necessary.
6 is essential and necessary in appropriate ratios with omega-3. And when we look at the fats that we eat... For instance, grain-fed cow, corn-fed cow, about 6-7-1 ratio from omega-6 to omega-3.
We're not having a hard time getting 6 in our diet.
Oh, no. Our diets are overly heavy in omega-6. You never will need to worry one day in your life about getting enough omega-6 because everything that we eat, even in nature, has plenty. All fats from nature, all fats that we produce. With 3, though, if you eat from nature, you're fine. If you don't eat from nature, that's when you might need to add it to. Yeah.
So, on practical level, when we go shopping, we're looking for meats.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to have to spend an extra couple pennies.
Here's the thing. There's two options. What I recommend for my clients. Organic meat is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that.
There's no way.
Yeah. My ground beef for organic meat is about $10 a pound. Okay? That's 1 pound. That's one meal for me. I'm not paying $10 for one meal of beef like that. So what do? You get the farmed meat, chicken, steak, fish, whatever it is, that has the lowest fat quantity. Then you add your own healthy fats to the meal, like coconut oil.
Lean cuts, white meat.
The lean cuts of meat. Then you add your own fats.
Yep.
That's what I would recommend for the cheapest way. But then coconut oil is a little expensive too, but I mean, you get a ton of fat from one jar of coconut oil.
But you're in control of the fat.
But then you're in control of the fat. So let's say I would go buy the shittiest chicken breast for $2 a pound or something, and it's got fat all over it. Yeah, the ratio is bad. But what do? I trim the fat, save the protein, add coconut oil, and I'm left with a very healthy, pretty equal ratio to omega 3 omega 6. Got him. So these are just little sneaky tricks that I've learned because, you know, I wanna, as soon as I learned about inflammatory omega 6 versus omega 3, I'm like, oh shit, I gotta try to get more omega 3. It's like, or I can just reduce the total amount of omega 6 by doing these certain things, and you do that. If you go to any steakhouse and you get a big old ribeye with a lot of fat in it, it's gonna be a very highly concentrated omega 6. This is why farm raised meat gets a lot of crap too. Even from the paleo community, right? The paleo community, the organic meat is like kind of the go-to, okay? But you can avoid buying these super expensive organic meat by getting lean cuts and trimming all the fat.
And the 6 is only in that fat, so it's not gonna be in muscle meat.
Correct, yeah. Remember, protein doesn't have anything to do with fat. The meat of the animal does not, or the pure protein in the fat, the chicken breast is pure muscle. Contains very, very little fat, a gram or two. Okay, if you get lean cuts of chicken breast, you're talking 5 grams of fat per pound. Very little, very little. Actually, I guess per serving. So yeah, like
4 or 5 ounces. Yeah.
Yeah, like 12-ish grams of fat per pound of chicken breast is what I, because I mine's 3 grams per serving and it's 4 servings per pound. 3 grams of fat per serving, or it's 5. I forget. But either way. I trim off fat and make a nice, easy meal. So whenever you think of fats, that's what you have to worry about. Guess what? I think they have something pretty for you, if I'm not mistaken. There it is. Page 194. Quickly turn. Top left, page 194. You guys have a nice little view of what is high in omega-6 versus what is high in omega-3. All right, saturated fats and oils. Guess what's got a great ratio up here?
Coconut oil,
very little omega-6, okay? It has barely any omega-3, but it's got very, very little omega-6. So it's not like this huge, like, oh my God, you shouldn't have this because it's so much omega-6, okay? Butter, though, especially grass-fed organic butter, has equal amounts of omega-6 to omega-3 as far as fats go. Kerrygold, organic grass-fed butter.
That's what you guys mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. So if you, yeah, and you can cook with butter. The paleo community cooks with butter. The primal really community cooks with butter, but there is some issues with dairy. If people have issues there, it could be a little inflammatory. But grass-fed organic butter is almost pure fat, and the pure fat, all you really have to worry about is going to be the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. So. Grass-fed organic Kerrygold butter is going to be your best bet. I would rather have you eat butter than vegetable oil. I want you guys to look at vegetable oil really quick, or corn oil, sunflower oil, yeah, soybean oil. See how high in omega-6 those are? Okay. Moving further down the line, beef tallow is just pure beef fat. Look, it's not that bad, but it is a little higher in omega-6. Palm oil is pure saturated fat too. I wouldn't recommend it. It's a little higher there in omega-6. Next, we have olive oil. Olive oil's got a little bit of omega-6 in there, but it's still plenty healthy and it's got some omega-3. So I'd want you to have that. Canola oil, I mean, it's got a good ratio of both, but to tell the truth, it's a lot of omega-6 and a lot of omega-3, which isn't terrible. But choose olive oil and coconut oil over those, in my opinion. Peanut oil, pure omega-6. This most nuts, remember, guys, are high in omega-6, very high in omega-6, very low in omega-3. Except if you get like macadamias, some nuts are better than others as far as the concentration of omega.
Peanut butter.
Yeah. So there's another reason why it might be a little inflammatory.
This is the worst day.
And then obviously so monounsaturated and polyunsaturated oils have more omega-6. Okay. Polyunsaturated fats are like, Yeah, sunflower oil, corn oil, soybean oil, cotton oil. Do not have those in your diet. Absolutely not.
Sunflower seeds.
Yeah. But it's the thing is, with sunflower seeds, how much fat are you actually getting? If you're eating a whole bag, yeah, you might get some fat from it. If you're eating, like, you know, a handful or two, and yeah. But you know when you go out on the baseball field, baseball diamond, or just, golf, and you get some seeds, yeah, you're just nonstop. But, I mean, that's not a staple in your diet by any means. So it's not like, you know, having that here and there is not going to be crazy bad. Yeah, but please don't have any of the bottom ones, polyunsaturated oils. Do not. And you can't really cook with those because they denature and turn to trans fats very easily because they have a very low melting point and smoke point is what it's called. Yeah. So
there's a lot of issues with soybean that's been, like, recurring in a lot of our modules. Why is it that soybeans get such a positive rep then?
Oh, because vegetarians love soy. Tofu, it's cheap. Well, here's the thing. The soy industry almost makes as much as the grain industry because it's so easy, so cheap, and it's GMO, super GMO. Soy milk, soy products, tofu, soy bean oil, soy everything. It's in everything, just as much as wheat.
Back home where I come from, Kansas, it's nothing but cornfields, wheat fields, and soybeans.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
They're owned by, like,
and that's the cheapest, easiest to grow, and most profitable.
Barley and alfalfa.
Just as detrimental as
the soybean, in my opinion, is pretty much as bad as something like corn. Yeah. This is like going to get edamame at like at a Japanese place or something like that. Yeah, it's probably better to avoid that sort of thing. It's in its pure form at least, like kind of how nature wanted it. But I mean, you're still getting lectins and as well as bad fats. But it's got protein, which the vegetarian people are like, oh my god, a bean that has protein and it's got, you know, it's low fat. This is great. Okay. Yeah. So soy is like the vegetarian's protein source, and it's awful. And its process is shit. Okay.
I never tried it.
Okay. Yeah, don't try. You don't need to. All right. So going back, we're gonna finish up here and do the rest at a later time, but. Going back, so alpha-linoleic acid, linoleic acid, and eicanosoids, you're basically understanding that the you need omega-6s and omega-3s to live. They are essential fatty acids. You need to know that. And let's talk about triglycerides to end it. Okay. Triglycerides, like I mentioned before, glycerol backbone with three fatty acids attached. Those three fatty acids could be of any different fatty acids, like omega-3s, it could be omega-6s, it could be omega-9s, it could be saturated, it could be any oleic acid, linoleic acid, alpha-linoleic acid, stearic acid, palmitic acid. Yeah, I don't know anymore. and the triglyceride is the main lipid or main fat found in our diet as well as our stored fat. Okay, we store fat as triglycerides, and we eat fat as triglycerides. Similar to protein, a triglyceride must be broken apart before it can be absorbed and digested, and then we remake triglycerides on the other end in the liver or in the cells. Yeah, so three fatty acids in a glycerol backbone. What else? Page 190, sorry. As an energy source, triglyceride is very potent. Remember, 1 gram of fat equals how many? Nine, yeah. And you can kind of see that the structure of a triglyceride, it has a whole sugar there, or well, half sugar it looks like, and a whole bunch of energy from those fatty acids, right? That's why it, in comparison, molecularly, the fat stores a ton more energy in their bonds. Make sense? Okay. And how do you break apart a fat? How do you break down a triglyceride? Is you have to separate the fatty acids from the glycerol, and you do that via water. Okay. So a lot of people say the more water you drink, the easier it is to break down fat. There is some truth to that. this is why if you don't drink a lot of water, you might not have the best or the easiest time metabolizing fat.
Is that the whole gallon thing?
Yeah, that's like a gallon a day. You just drink a lot of water sort of thing. All right, what else? Yeah, super rich in calories. Under normal circumstances, dietary stored fat supply about 60% of the body's resting energy needs, and it is considered protein sparing. If they ever ask what is protein sparing on a test, it's carbohydrates, even though fat is also protein sparing. But remember, fat can be used as energy, so therefore it would spare protein from being used as energy, if that makes sense. And that's right at the bottom right of page 190, in the little italics right there. So the way that we store triglycerides, or we store fat in the form of triglycerides, and we store it as body fat, we store it in these cells called adipocytes, or adipose tissue. That's at the bottom right of page 190. The fat is stored inside fat cells called adipocytes, which form fat tissue, technically called adipose tissue. And hibernating animals have perfected this process. The fat stores they build up in through autumn can see them through the entire winters of non-eating. We have a similar, remember when we talk about seasonal eating, carbohydrates are high in the spring, late spring, all summer, and early autumn. Then we try to get as fat as possible to survive the winter, leading to a higher rate of survival, higher chance for survival if we are fatter going into winter, because we can live off of some of that stored fat. And when I say carbohydrates are higher in the late spring, summer, and early fall, I'm talking about fruits, or mainly, fruits and veggies, but mainly fruits. All right, plants. Okay, fat cells, the storage medium, this is what it looks like, top left, page 192. What is the, why else do we store body fat besides fuel? For insulation and protection, it literally keeps us warm. It can also protect our organs. It can surround our organs to give it cushioning from impacts. It's important for heat retention. One pound of fat, we store about 6 times more energy than 1 pound of glycogen stored in the body, meaning the bonds that fats hold are a lot larger. It's kind of what I mentioned earlier. And that's kind of at the quick bite right there on the left-hand side of page 192. All right. That's about all we're going to go over for today. We'll finish it off Monday or Tuesday.
Do we do the study questions, or we wait to finish chapter
5? I will have you do the study questions from chapter 5 for homework over the weekend, and then we'll finish up that and then go over them next section. There will be a quiz for fat. We'll give that Monday, though, or Tuesday.